Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
Where'd my coffee go? Here we go! Good morning, everybody.
Hey, gang.
Woo! Oh, what a rush. There's the theme song.
It's Wednesday morning.
Macaroni. Crazy.
Hey, how's the weather in Ottawa?
Ah, it is actually a beautiful February day, floating around the freezing mark, nice and bright. Not gonna lie, it feels kind of like the groundhog said to us, enough of this last week, let's get her on out of here.
Excellente.
As we mentioned last week, I'm up in the northern time zone, so we're actually one...
A few clicks away, something like that, yeah.
Yes, we're everything is a day ahead.
I won't tell you what the weather's going to be like here in Arizona.
Yeah,
it's going to be a horribly miserable day today. I got to tell you, it's freezing rain, cold. You know.
Yep. Typical Arizona weather for this time of year. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, it couldn't be much worse.
Why do people choose to live there?
I don't know.
But you know.
But I know why New York is a great place to live, because our guest, Janet Clary, lives there.
Hello, Janet. How are you? And welcome to Idiotic.
Thank you. Great to see you both again. Yeah. It's been a while. So thanks for having me on.
Reminiscing in the green room about bumping into each other at conferences and those things. So, you know, back when there were conferences. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's that?
What is that? I don't even know anymore. I haven't left my house in 2 years.
It's almost like 8-track tapes, right? Conferences. You know? What's that, Daddy?
Well, there was a time when we all used to meet up and talk about our jobs with other professionals.
Hmm. And at the end of the session, you could put a pencil and rewind the conference. And no, wait, I'm confusing technologies now. Folks, Janet Clary is with us today. Janet, it's your first time joining us here on Idiotic. So introduce yourself to the folks in the chat that we've got joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Janet Clary. I am located in upstate New York, so like right in the center of New York. I have the same weather as Ottawa today, I'll bet you. And I work for McLean & Company, who's based in Canada, in Toronto. And London, Ontario, too. A couple offices there, office in maybe Australia and Las Vegas. So I'm director of HR research and advisory services there. And that's kind of been my background for the past several years, is working at Burson & Associates and then Burson by Deloitte. And then when they were acquired, and then on to McLean. I've worked at the eLearning Guild for a little while, so may know some of you from there. And Brandon Hall Research. So my background is pretty much been learning and development and careers. And I went to Capella University for instructional design for online learning. So my true love is instructional design, where I started my career back at an insurance company probably 15 years ago, standing up an LMS and LCMS, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing now. So And just by way of what I'm going to show you today and share some trends that for 2022 that we did and launched. And Brett, I know that's how we caught up together, is kind of, you know, putting that out there on LinkedIn and sharing some trends. So talking about some trends and then trying to, you know, look at those or talk about those through the lens of instructional design and what that really means. So I want to bring that up. Now, I just want to share, too, that, I think the beauty of my job right now is that there's a blend of instructional design and research and advisory, because in my past roles in doing research and advising, it's kind of like you're working off of a research report or a, you know, a piece of research, if you will, right? That's kind of a document. And now I've flipped that. So what I'm actually producing with a team, so leading teams that create actual tools that HR uses to implement, right? So these are actionable tools, downloadable, you know, forms and all sorts of things. And we cover the all HR taxonomies. I oversee, of course, learning and development, metrics and analytics and HR strategy. So that's kind of my area I'm in now. So I just feel like the most incredible lucky person to have stumbled into this job, because it takes a couple of things that I love. I'm like, how did I even find this? This is so cool. So anyways, great company. And that's just a little bit of my background. So
very, very cool. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a glorious job, being able to sort of have all of those pieces at play. Not going to lie, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It really is.
We should all look into a job.
I work with
that.
Canadians and it's amazing. Most of Canadians.
Sorry.
Project.
Had to throw that in. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Are you tired of hearing pasta yet instead of pasta? Anyway.
It was fun to see you post that on LinkedIn, because I did, since you and I go way back, I knew that this would be a really great conversation because of all the things that you just said, right? To be able to talk to somebody who's gone through and done all this research and looked at all this data and all these statistics and put together the report, but also have that knowledge and understanding of instructional design. And for us as an instructional designer community to be able to, at least for those of us who work in HR departments, right? Like trainers span lots of different parts of an organization, but many of us work in HR departments, and you know, to be able to look up out from the weeds of just instructional design and what we do, and to be able to see what that bigger picture of the org that we're in, what they're struggling with and what they're doing, I think it's going to help give us a lot of perspective on, okay, how can we as instructional designers help make that happen? So if we're not educated on those things, then we can't, I would assume, not be as effective as we could be. So I'm looking forward to what has popped out the most in the trends. So how do we want to start this? How do we want to roll?
So I think what I want to do is share some webinar slides, just because we're talking about data, right? Mm-hmm. And you certainly don't want to hear me talk about data. You want to look at that a little bit, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's real fun when we all try to make bar graphs with our fingers to represent info. You know, but like sometimes pictures are better than kind of drawing pictures, pre-made pictures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so let me just share... share my screen here, and you guys will let me know if I am showing you trends.
Yep, we see the big splash type
yep,
page.
We got it.
Perfect. Okay. So I'm going to go by here and just kind of, you know, when we did this, we went down to these four trends. We're talking about attraction and retention, this new world of work, DEI, and then skills in an age of change. I've taken the skills and put that up first. Okay, I'm going to go through some basic HR stuff, and then we're going to dive into the skills a little bit, because it's really most applicable to us, even though all of these are. So I'll go backwards on these and we'll get through them that way. So I always, you know, when we're presenting research, it comes up where there's questions of like, well, who did you talk to? Blah, 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 right? So a little bit about organizational sizes and what that means when we're talking about that, what high performing means in terms of how we did this research, and then kind of, you know, how we looked at it that way. So that slide here, and these slides are going to be available to you. So if you want to read a little bit, you know, into that, you'll have that opportunity. So HR in 2022. So just, you know, at a high level, what we found is that, you know, recruitment remains a top priority. And then What's applicable to us, I think, is this employee experience kind of leaping up to second place, because we impact that so much, right? In how employees experience how they train, how they learn on the job, and those types of things. So that's kind of what we came up with there. Now, one question that I think is interesting is, how is HR spending its time? And as you look along the bottom there, you'll just see the quite the difference this year in talent acquisition. It'll come as no surprise to anyone. So, you know, love to hear, like, you know, how does that impact your job right now in terms of so much time being spent on just trying to acquire talent? You know, from our perspective and the types of calls I get in sharing with the members, it's really about delivering on that promise of development, because quite often someone will join an organization for development opportunities, and then that's the first reason they leave, or the number one reason they leave is that they didn't get that, right? So I think for us, that unique opportunity is, you know, what is that messaging, right? To potential, yeah. Right? And what is that messaging? And am I aligned with that? Am I aligned with what people are hearing? Right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, it's also, you know, the last few years have been a real shift in how we even think about acquiring talent and what the onboarding looks like. As you know, still so many folks working remotely. Whereas
that's what I was going to say. Yeah, the onboarding.
The whole nature of that has had to such a big shift. I know even here at Domino, we've had to, you know, put together a whole new sort of onboarding process, just recognizing the fact that you used to be able to walk around and introduce everybody, even, you know, that kind of connectivity. So,
yeah, we had to pivot quickly, didn't we? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, and it's, you know, onboarding, which, heck, we've even had a few episodes talking specifically about onboarding. And when I was going through these charts, when I first saw them, the report, and looking at the trends, that was my first thought when I saw such a huge difference with that talent acquisition, because that's that trickle down, right? If they're needing to acquire more talent, all of a sudden that puts a lot of pressure on us to make sure that all of those onboarding events or, you know, processes, learning solutions, whatever it is impactful and useful in today's environment. Like what we did, you know, 2 years ago may not actually be functional and usable today, but yet it's going to be needed to be used more often now. And so now what do you do, right? So I would assume that people have been scrambling, but it'd be interesting to hear from folks in the chat. And maybe we have folks who don't have that particular role and aren't responsible for onboarding. But if you are and you want to drop into the chat, if you've experienced, you know, how this has impacted you, that'd be great to see.
Yeah, Kim's dropped a note in the chat. Ramping up onboarding courses, making them quicker, more engaging and endearing, in quotes, endearing new hires to the company. Wow. And I think the wow is a sort of maybe a, why weren't we doing this before? If I can interpret a little bit, because I think there's a little bit of... I think there's a little bit of a touch maybe of sarcasm from Kim too. Like,
well, it's just a lot of work, right? I mean, she's summed it up very nicely, but if you know, anybody that's been doing this job for a long time can read between the lines there and see that that's a lot of work that has to be either done or redone, right? Updated, changed, whatnot. So,
you know, and what's interesting now with some of that is kind of, you know, redoing things. I have talked to a few organizations that pretty much shut down all their training, and they're trying to ramp up some programs that they had before. And that to me has to be just such a challenge, right?
Oh, sure. And that, yeah, sorry.
So, I mean, just one word too, before I move on to the next one here, is be kind to your people that work in TA. They're totally burnt out.
No
it's
kidding.
Been a rough time. Let me tell you, if you have a lot of friends in there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you was, as we hit on each one of these things, if there are any particular stories or conversations you had with some of these companies that stand out, those would really help drive the point home too. Those are always great.
Yeah. So, you know, here again, kind of this key role in strategy. We don't talk a lot about, at least in my experience, didn't really talk a lot about the overall HR strategy and where we fit in. If you're not sure of that, I think you need to really, you know, kind of revisit what is our new HR strategy right now. I mean, can you say that? Can you articulate that? And where does L&D align with that and align with the business strategy, right? So just a couple of kind of environmental pressures that have expanded HR's role and everybody's role, of course, diversity, equity, and inclusion, corporate social responsibility, environmental and social governance. We're seeing this across all sorts of roles. So for instance, if you were, you know, a corporate counsel for an organization years ago, it was kind of a plush job where you weren't doing the hardcore kind of attorney stuff or whatever if you're a house counsel. And now you're dealing with all of this stuff. You're dealing with things that blow up on social media, you know, the corporate social responsibility and things like that. So just taking aside of totally outside of our area, and this applies to HR too. So just doing more, being responsible for a lot more.
There's some great comments in the chat, Chris. I don't know if you've been watching them too, but I don't even know where to start. I mean, Chris Johnson in the chat has a great one. We're totally redesigning our onboarding to focus more on belonging and making connections. Right? And that does seem, I mean, that's a great direction to go, at least as far as I see it with everything that's happening, right? And if we, and then, but it also makes me scratch my head and think to myself, wow, were we all not doing that before? And as I then start to think back, I'm like, wow, you know what? 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago when I was, you know, doing it more regularly, maybe we weren't.
I mean, like I said earlier, the fact that we can't even just introduce people, you know, to each other in a physical location means you've got to figure out how to connect people so that they know who does what, but also just who likes what, and, you know, how to have that kind of social experience of cohesion, et cetera. Yeah. Robert's thrown in a thought, having just gone through a move to a new position after a layoff last year, I understand the increase in time, but I question if HR needs to revisit with the stakeholders about exactly what they need to acquire a new employee. Lots of excess interviews, forms, tests, et cetera. So the process of being someone who's just been recently hired and onboarded, et cetera. Robert's got some thoughts on there. Bobby's also throwing in, it's important to remember that onboarding isn't just for the new hire. It requires a lot of change for existing employees and their role in orienting new hires to a department, to the technology, to the job, to the company vernacular, et cetera, for sure.
Yeah. It's a great
That's
point.
Spot on. Yeah. And that, so maybe that even requires some additional training to be created for them too. Right. And then of course that adds another layer of work that has to be done. It just, right. It's just, as we start to see this, we all know all of these changes that are occurring are overwhelming, but as we start to dig it down and look at these trends and really start to identify these additional things, you can really, really see the impact that it's going to have on us as instructional designers in these roles as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But let's, so some great thoughts from the folks in the chat about that onboarding process. Where else do we need to go with the info that you brought us here today then, Janet?
Yeah, so let's kind of look at our effectiveness, right? And, you know, The previous slide, we're talking really about broadening. And I think broadening is a great thing for us. We don't want to be in our little silos, right? We want to think about everything in the organization. So this is just a little bit about HR's effectiveness and how it's increased, which is a great thing, right? So just want to share some information there. Learning and development, you'll see like not,
Oops.
But still.
Is that bad?
You know, so, but there's often
a
gap.
Is that a reflection, the negative 2% for enabling learning and development, is that perhaps a reflection of the sheer wave of extra things all of a sudden, though, that HR has to deal with, that you've got a basket of stuff and you've got to put, you know, there's a whole bunch of new things added to the basket, perhaps? I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Mm-hmm. You know, and this is really all about perception. What is the perceived effectiveness? of these various groups. Right. Okay. So you think about it in terms of, do you know? I mean, do you take like, you know, NPS scores or something like that? Do you know how people feel, how people perceive the effectiveness of L&D in the organization?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that does really clarify this slide a lot, actually, right? The whole idea of perception of it. And I would think that because of all the things we mentioned about on the previous slide, all the stuff that needs to be done that probably took a while to get done, the perception of the work that we do probably slipped off a little bit in a lot of people's eyes because there was so much that needed to be done. And, you know, as always, we typically lack enough resources to meet that need.
Right. So before I get into skills, just a couple more, you know, kind of things that we saw when we were doing this research is this higher level of stress. And right now, entering our new research cycle, we're working on a piece on burnout, how to you know, support people that are experiencing burnout in the organization. So kind of interesting, you know, take on research, I guess, is going in that way, but it's a very real problem. You can see this number over here, only 12% of the respondents to the survey have programs or processes to support HR professionals, right? HR supports everybody else quite often, not themselves. So if you're experiencing higher level of stress,
Who helps us?
Here it is, right? This is it right here. But this is very real, you know? This is something to consider. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other, right?
Wow. Yeah, that really drives home a lot of different points on a lot of different levels.
I wonder if there's anybody joining us today who actually feels less stressed than I'd hate to make assumptions. I don't know. Maybe we've got some folks who've retired.
Right. You know? Yeah. Definitely less.
It's like, yeah. I'm out.
So one of the, you know, I want to get into something that's a little more close to home for us, and that is, you know, our of those four trends, one of them was skills in an age of change. So I want to dive into that just a little bit. So, you know, we kind of compared organizations that had high proficiency in resilience and change management and design thinking more likely to be high performing in productivity and the ability to change and in innovation. And I'd love to hear anything in chat about anyone working on any of you know, resilience, on design thinking, on change management.
Mm-hmm. We've definitely done a couple of episodes on design thinking because it's something that I think most people can see a direct sort of alignment with designing learning programs in various places. But resilience is a topic I don't think we've ever had a focused session on that at all. So, yeah.
I know some people who actually speak on that. I'm going to reach out. It's an excellent point.
Yeah, that's a good number. 1.8 times more likely to be high performing.
Yeah. Bobby is throwing in the chat that this slide is my life. So very clearly, Bobby resonates and Chris Johnson is adding, we're using our mindfulness program focused on resilience. So and he had mentioned earlier in the chat about a mindfulness program that they'd been introducing in his organization. So that's cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So a little bit here too on, you know, we're just talking about resilience, but what about other competencies and kind of remaining stagnant?
Yeah, it's interesting. Wow, those, like, circling around what we were talking about earlier with the visuals and whatnot, but this really does tell that story, right? Just looking at the different years.
Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't come as any surprise, really, right? Resilience. Based on, you know, what life's been like the past little while. So.
Feels like we should have been talking about resilience a lot more these last couple of years.
Exactly.
Why am I just getting to this now? I, you know, but hey, better late than never, right? Yeah. And I should say, for just kind of throw in a a little specific shout out to anybody listening to this podcast later. Some great visuals here that you're missing. So we'll try to do a better job of explaining what we're talking about if you're listening to this on audio. But again, we're going to be able to share these slides with folks, right, Janet? Yes, is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, yep. Great. Well, yeah, we'll have it up on the blog post afterwards too.
Perfect.
Brilliant.
So here we're talking a little bit about being strategic as L&D, right? So it really, you know, accelerating the key competencies, you've got to be more strategic. So enabling continuous learning, we've been talking about this for years and years and years, right? But when HR is really effective at this, the organization is more productive, is more innovative, and has the ability to really change at scale.
What does that mean? I know you may not know this, but maybe it might trigger something for you in some conversations you had. But when you're doing this type of research and asking these questions, what is your sense of what they think enabling learning and development means, or effective at enabling learning and development? Like, what specifically what do they mean by that? If you know, I mean,
when we're talking about enabling learning and development in general, it's creating those conditions for continuous learning to thrive, right? And that's really what we're talking about.
Okay.
So creating those conditions.
So it's more cultural than just increasing the sheer quantity of courses in the LMS,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I was getting at, right? It seems to be a much bigger conversation. Like, there's only so much we can do as instructional designers individually in our roles. When it comes to things like this, there has to be some support at that management level. So I don't know if we have any training managers or CLOs joining us today, but to help instructional designers that work for you be more effective, if, you know, helping promote that into the higher levels, into the executive suite and whatnot, and help them understand that this is an important part, and show them the trends.
Now, leadership competencies, here, strong focus in 2022. I can't tell you an uptick in calls I've had in the first part of this year around leadership competencies. Organizations revisiting their mission, values, their strategy, and kind of coming up with new leadership competencies. And a lot around supporting managers in hybrid work environments, and those types of things. So kind of revisiting those leadership competencies. A lot of activity there, a lot of interest, and a lot of interest in how do we support managers going forward in this kind of new way of working, for a certain block of workers, right? We're talking about knowledge workers. We're talking about that particular group, right? Not people that have to work on site.
Yeah, Bobby's thrown a nice comment in the chat here. Based on my experience, organizations that focus more on their products and financials during the pandemic, they're in survival mode. Tending to their people has taken a back seat to that effort, and now seeing the consequences of their actions. It's, you know, we had the wave of just, yeah, trying to survive and stay on top and not go down. And now you stop and you pause and you breathe and you realize that so much has shifted, and it's time to catch up and make sure that we're working back on on the foundation, the people.
Yep. Yeah. So just listed on this slide are really those three skill gaps that were rated important or very important. So those leadership competencies, personal competencies, and then technical skills.
It was, so I wonder too, were there any specifics around that? Again, not to kind of drive, us back a slide, but I think it rolls into this slide too. When they say leadership competencies and whatnot, are they looking, do you see them looking to the instructional designers to say, hey, you guys are good at this kind of stuff, tell us what we need to be doing to increase these competencies? We know it's not just buying a library of leadership courses, but maybe it is, or maybe that's a start. If you've got nothing and limited resources, maybe you buy a library of courses to get people started and to get them thinking. And then maybe you bring in, I don't know, do you bring in an Ellen, a leadership consultant?
No, I think, how we work with companies or how I'm working with companies now is generally we'll have, getting away from giant competency libraries because they're so hard to manage and things are changing so quickly. It's more about finding three or four key competencies for leaders. And then where instructional designers come into that is so maybe you have the definition around, a competency that is called resilience. Okay, we want leadership resiliency, and that's part of who we are as an organization. And then, of course, you're kind of building out proficiency levels, right? So what does that look like? What behaviors does that look like? Get all that work done. And then what happens? You have to drill down into each of those to determine what skills are needed for that. And that's the gap you fill, right?
Right.
That's where you need to have, some sort of learning solutions in place, whether that's, some sort of experience for leadership, job rotation, something like that, right? So I think that's where you're getting at it. So definitely not about like creating a library or buying a library and then just trying to fill some gaps with it, but actually focusing on those skill gaps that flow out of those proficiency levels, because it ties to everything else that HR does, succession, all of that, right? So I think that's a great question. I'm glad we backed up a slide.
Paul has an awesome Paul has dropped an awesome nugget into the chat that managing remotely points up the weakness in leadership that was lacking before the pandemic hit. And there's an awful lot of, thumbs ups and et cetera following that. A lot of folks are chiming in agreeing that. So, and Bobby supplemented that saying it also shows a weakness in leadership that they didn't trust their employees' abilities and innovative ideas to carry them forward. So. Yeah. And Kim threw in, agreed, this is not the time for micromanagers.
Wow. All right. So where are we at on this slide?
So a lot of gaps. So again, I get a lot of calls for how do we support our managers, right? What kind of development opportunities do they need? So, we have develop a bit of a toolkit for people leaders, for managers to kind of manage in this hybrid environment that includes things like looking at rituals that you want to keep, right? Those types of things, setting up kind of communication guidelines. What's that going to look like in this new environment? And I think number one in terms of supporting managers in that kind of new work environment is having flexibility. So for us, we're going to realize that it's going to be very difficult and it's going to change frequently, right? So just some what are organizations doing to kind of address the gap here? Communities of practice is listed, kind of mentorship programs, assessing competency, and then manager training you could see up top. So always a high demand for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of work. Like we've been noticing since the first slide, there's a lot of work here that instructional designers can engage in, and have an impact.
Yeah, and then just on the bottom of this slide, 90% of respondents said there's a gap in manager capabilities at their organization. 90%.
You might as well just say all of them at that point, I guess, right? Right.
So a lot of gaps there.
Who are the 10% is what I want
to
know.
It's not a good time to be a manager.
Wow.
And then this one, big headline, development of leadership and strategic competencies is overlooked in HR.
Yeah. It kind of leads us to this at the end of the day with all the other little things going on that need to be done, right? Something drops off, and sadly, I think this is what tends to drop, but it's the thing that is needed the most, is the irony of the whole thing, or the contradiction, or whatever the word is I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Paul has also dropped another nugget that the 10% that we were just talking about are on this call. Paul, thank you so much for your enthusiastic endorsement we're very flattered to think that idiotic is a place where the 10% come.
Yeah, we try. Everybody in here, I see all of you. I know what good work you guys do.
Yep.
So this slide, and I just want you to, you know, realize here kind of this, you know, the darker blue that you're seeing, or, you know, what's important or highly important skills gaps in HR, right? In HR. And then the prevalence of development offerings for HR. So I just want to kind of drive that home, is that that's mm-hmm. for HR, right? HR lacking leadership competencies, personal mm-hmm. competencies like digital literacy, business acumen.
Oh, that's the part that goes back to that other slide, right? Who helps us, right? Who helps the HR department, right? Yeah. And how do we, you know, it starts to feel a little self-serving, right? When you go to upper management and say, we need to do XYZ for our own department.
Right. You know? So looking at that bottom right there, the development of, you know, competencies overlooked, really thinking about what increases HR effectiveness. It's supporting change. It's providing a great employee experience. It's enabling innovation, fostering an environment of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and facilitating data-driven people decisions.
I think everybody can use those right now, all five of those, mm-hmm. in a presentation to your management this week. It hits it.
For all of HR, but for all of us today, I mean, these are the types of, you know, strategic competencies that we need to develop.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, check out that insight at the bottom, and I just want to hear what you think of it. So it says, for those that are just listening, hire for aptitude, train for skill.
It reminds me, one of my first jobs as an adult, the owner of the business said something at one point, I hire people who are smarter than me. a recognition, I'm not saying that I was smarter than my boss, but just, you know, that recognition that if skills can be acquired, but it's, you know, the ability for people to, you know, to want to do, to learn, et cetera. That's such a key thing. I mean, it points up to all those skills of, you know, resilience, for instance, as well.
Right. So those three key data points there is, when hiring someone, what's most important? You can look at 61%, the ability to learn and demonstrated skills and experience are equally important. So demonstrated skills and experience equally important, ability to learn.
Mm-hmm. That says a lot right there, and I don't even know where to start.
Right. That's, so they're saying it's equally important, but 23% are saying the ability to learn is more important than skills and experience. 16% saying skills and experience are more important than the ability to learn.
That 16% worries me, that's for sure. I'm wondering what kind of work, what their organization, you know, really looks like then, if you're not.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to think about.
You know, if not thinking about the ability to move forward, to improve, to change, which is all part of reflected in how well someone can learn, etc. Interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, the very, very last line in that insight at the bottom, I think, is a key takeaway for us, and that's employees must have a learn-to-learn mindset to keep up. So what can you do to shift that mindset for your existing employees? How do you shift people to have a learn-to-learn mindset?
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation that I don't think we've ever had before. I mean, it feels kind of meta, really, but does anybody in the chat, do we have any programs on learning to learn? I mean, how does an instructional designer look at that and say, yes, I totally agree. It makes perfect sense. As an instructional designer that loves to learn, everybody should, you know, learn how to learn effectively. But do we have any programs in place to help teach people that, right? I don't think I've seen any.
Yeah, and that to me, Brent, really comes up to, you know, communication, right? Communicating that out, and it reflected, you know, in the behavior of managers, of senior managers, right? And, you know, from our perspective, it's kind of like triggering that whole dynamic learning mindset in everything we do, right? So there's not something we can actually pull out of the air or create necessarily that helps people get there, but we can communicate that out. So, you know, I'd encourage anyone to just spend a little time researching that and how to influence that in the organization, right? How to shift the mindset, because we all have that mindset.
Right.
And how do we bring that to the surface in what we do and influence others?
To Chris's point earlier, again, I think it does revolve around culture, but influence is a great word. I think we need to be an active part of influencing that culture change, and it doesn't happen overnight. And I don't think there's really any sort of metric you can, you know, track. I think it's over the long haul. I mean, maybe you can, but
That Brent was actually a leadership competency for a lot of organizations is influence.
Oh,
for leadership. Yep. So happy if someone wants to connect afterwards and I can, you know, share some of those proficiency levels in terms of what do you mean by that and what does that look like in terms of behavior?
Yeah. Tanya's thrown a note in there that this all relates to emotional intelligence skills as well. You can't have a learn to learn mindset when you're focused on ego or fear.
That's a great point.
Yeah. It also goes back then to the hiring and the talent acquisition, right? How do we hire for people who have these innate sort of, abilities or the emotional intelligence and things like that? It's all so intertwined. This is great to see.
So I'm going to hit on these other three trends quickly. I just want to get through skills because that's really, really our area. But after the tipping point with DEI, I just want to share some things on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's really that, you know, organizations acknowledge the value of it, that it's very important, but it's not a focus. It continues to decrease. Right. So there was an uptick around, you know, a lot of things that happened in March of 2021, and a lot of organizations really putting a lot of, money and support into diversity, equity, inclusion. But unfortunately, when we're coming up with the survey, not quite doing a lot. So not really a focus. So not reflected here in, you know, concrete actions. All talk? I don't know.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a real kick in the pants for a lot of people. I think a lot of people, even in this chat, I mean, is we've had these conversations too, and they're, it's a big, big topic, and a lot of folks have covered them over the last 2 years and put together new programs and whatnot, and to hear that it's not going well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of organizations that are doing great things, right? But for those organizations that started out and just ended up saying, okay, we're just going to do unconscious bias training and that's going to, you know, fix what we need to fix or you know, check off the box or something without having a larger DEI strategy, that's not going to work, right? That's kind of just a waste of time for both, you know, anyone creating that. If that's all it is, I mean, I'm saying there's value in it. I'm just saying if that was the fix, that wasn't the way to go. But I think in terms of all of HR and L&D and instructional designers is that we look at what we're doing through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's where we'll have the greatest impact. So I'm like standing back and saying, I'm going to look at what I'm doing, what I'm working on through that lens of diversity, equity, inclusion, and see how I can influence that. And that goes right down to, you know, selecting what, you know, what is going on the screen, right, in front of people.
Yeah.
At a most basic level, right? I mean, if you're, you know, authoring a course, using authoring tools in a course or something, what you're showing on the screen, how can you influence that, right? What kind of choices can you make?
Yeah. We're getting close to our to our wrap-up time. So I don't know if there are some, you know, one or two key things that you still wanted to focus on. And Craig's also got a question that I'll throw out. He added it in the question panel. How do you keep current with the trends and technology around all of this stuff when you're a small company, and particularly, you know, sort of only hiring, you know, once a year at that, you know, at most. So, I mean, how do the smaller organizations, you know, deal with this stuff?
Most of the organizations I talk to are small organizations. So, you know, a key kind of group for us of our memberships are, you know, someone that might be a one person HR person, you know, one person handling HR, or maybe just 10 people, right? And, you know, I think it's important to, you know, you can only focus on what you can focus on, right? You can't do all of these things, so you need to pick a few. But having a strategy doesn't really matter if you're one person or 400 people in HR, right? It's still important in what you, you know, what you're doing. So, I think, you know, stepping outside of your world of L&D, right? We need to kind of step outside of it and look at the bigger organizational needs. Yeah. How do we align with business strategy, right? And what's our HR strategy? If you don't have one, create one.
Start there.
Yeah, nobody's going to admit that in the chat, I don't think.
Well, that's just because it's the 10% that we draw to idiotic. They're already doing it right now. We definitely appreciate the enthusiasm, etc., that we see. There's been so much going on actually in the chat that we haven't been able to swing in. It's a really great stuff. So if folks haven't been paying attention there, awesome chance to sort of scroll back and take a peek at that. Brent, if you, as you roll in the music there, let's make sure we get the LinkedIn. As we mentioned, Janet's going to share these slides. So we'll post those up both on the blog summary post for this, on the Domino website and in the LinkedIn group. Join us there to get more of these things. Janet, how can folks connect with you? Where can they find you, etc.? Oh, you were dropping that in. It's like,
yeah,
you're
I put my LinkedIn and my Twitter account, and you know, just reach out with anything. Always happy to answer questions or help make connections on LinkedIn. I want to thank you guys for having me on and sharing some of this. If you want to hear the entire webinar, so get into some of those other trends and dig down a little bit more, I can put that link up in a post. So if you want to grab it from there, that's good. Awesome. And then downloadable slides if you want to, you know, share some of those within your organization or take a closer look. But, you know, thanks for sharing. I know it's a little bit odd sometimes to do just HR trends, you know, and see that through the lens of instructional design, but I've enjoyed doing that as part of this.
And no instructional designer is an island. We're part of an ecosystem, you know, that goes beyond just the narrowness of us putting words on web pages, for example. So, so much awesome stuff in the chat today. Thanks again, gang, as always. Don't forget to join us in the LinkedIn group there. We'll see you again next week. In the meantime, keep dancing.
It's dancing time. Thanks, Janet. Great to see you.